All right, here is the second and final piece of my conversation with Los Angeles-based PR executive Danny Duraney. You can follow Danny on Instagram and X by name, Danny Duraney, and also Duraney PR on Instagram. It truly was an enlightening conversation with Danny. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. As always, thanks for being a Dan Time subscriber. I appreciate you as a listener. Hope you enjoy the show. Now, talking about the series itself, I'm sure your prediction is that the Yankees are going to win, or I may be surprising me here, but do you have a Yankees in six, Yankees in seven type prediction?
I am not your average fan. I always am surprised when my team that I root for wins. You know, I've been very lucky in my lifetime to see, I believe, what is it, seven Yankees World Championships. You know, being born in Los Angeles, I've seen, I think, what is it, 11 Lakers championships. I've been a lucky sports fan to witness all those things. My only New York allegiance is New York because my family's from the East Coast, and that's a whole other podcast story.
Now, did you go to Dodger games growing up?
All the time. All the time. I hated the Dodgers growing up, but I never missed a game because I loved Vin Scully that much and I love baseball that much. We didn't have like basic cable, so we couldn't see whatever random ESPN game of the week was or whatever. So I watched a ton of Angels games. I actually rooted, the Angels were kind of like my second team. I kind of rooted for them quietly.
I love those old California Angels mid to late 80s uniforms and the ball cap.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And people forget, I think it was it the 86 series where they were pretty close? They were in the ALCS.
Every series. So back then, there was only three series. So you had the ALCS, you had the NLCS, and the World Series. Every World Series, or every series in 1986, was one pitch away from a completely different outcome. Everyone. From the Mets and Astros, the Angels and Red Sox, you know, Buckner's gaffe in game six. Every series was one pitch away.
Wow.
Everyone. That's crazy to me. And that to me is the best, to this day, that to me is still the best baseball postseason I've ever witnessed. Because it was just crazy. It was absolutely, I mean, the games were great. I think there were a couple blowout games. I think the Red Sox, the first game or the game seven, I think they crushed the Angels. I think there was like the first game of the 86 World Series was the first game of the 86 World Series was like 6-0, 6-2 or something like that. But every game was just super close. You had like Lenny Dykstra's home run. You had, you know, obviously Dave Henderson's home run, you know, Mookie's ball. It was just such excitement. I actually remember where I was when Dave Henderson hit the game five home run. When the Raiders played in Los Angeles, my dad took my brother and I to a Raiders Seahawks game. And we were sitting down, it was halftime. And we were sitting wherever we were sitting. And do you remember those old little mini TVs that people would bring with them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Those handheld TVs. I forget what they were called.
They were black and white too, but
they're black and white, mm-hmm. Completely black and white. And I remember him just watching it. I was just looking over his shoulder like this. When Dave Henderson, and when the Raiders were played in LA in the 80s, you had 90 to 100,000 people easily at the Los Angeles Coliseum. When he hit that home run, the entire air of that stadium just went like this.
Yeah.
What we're hearing. Dead silence. I will never forget how loud that silence was. It was crazy. But
and to just fall silent in an instant.
Yeah, it was just like, what just happened? Because I mean, the Angels were always the in Los Angeles, you know, they were always the stepchild. They always have a consistent group of fans. They get 25,000 people to come to every game, which most teams would kill for. You know, they killed it in 2002 with the rally, yeah. Monkey, and just that was nuts, and those thunder sticks or whatever they're called. But they've always had this loyal base. But you know, this for baseball, it's always going to be the Dodgers town, no matter what happens. And I think people were excited to see the angels finally do something with themselves. It's like, oh my God, this it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And everyone loved Gene Autry, and everyone wanted Gene Autry to win something. And, you know, it's a shame, but you know, that's what makes baseball, baseball.
Well, a couple,
prediction. Well, to go back to my prediction. Yeah. So to what I was saying is that I never think my teams are going to win. I always think that, you know, only a few times in history, like the Yankees of the 90s, the Lakers of the 80s, would I have been that bold to say, oh, it's no problem. It's going to happen. I don't know. I don't think it's something that's, it's not going to be easy. I would be shocked if it was going to be easy. I still think the Dodgers are the better team, you know, because they're just all clicking, but the Yankees are clicking too. I think the Yankees have better pitching. You know, the Dodgers hitting is, it's coming from their bottom part of the order, which is nuts. You know, so it's, who knows? I mean, look, we get to see Ohtani. Like, we are so privileged as a society to see Ohtani and Judge playing in a World Series. Take the equation that I'm not a Yankee fan. You are watching the two most storied franchises play, what, their 14th World Series together?
Yeah.
And two greatest ball players, not only in the game, but of a generation, playing in the World Series together. If you're a baseball fan and you're not watching this, you don't deserve to watch baseball ever again.
Oh, yeah. It is a pitch-by-pitch World Series matchup. I think there's going to be some offensive fireworks here and there, but if you really love watching a 1-2 count, what's he going to throw? A full count, runners on the corners or bases loaded. This is a dream come true, because how are you going to attack Stanton? How are you attacking Ohtani? Where do you pitch the guy? I love every time Shohei comes up to bat, you're thinking, what is going through that pitcher's mind, whoever's on the mound? Because his best stuff is, that's his best stuff for everybody else. Now he's got a...
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, it's, you know, and Ohtani plays great, and he's always played great in Yankee Stadium. Judge is, you know, the few games he's played against the Dodgers, has done well against the Dodgers, and you know, Stanton's one of the, what, 5-6 people have actually hit a home run out of Dodger Stadium. I'm hoping it's going to be a great series. I mean, I wish it was going to be a 4-game sweep by the Yankees. I'm not going to lie, but you know, as long as they win and I don't have a heart attack, because I'm already feeling the need to stress eat.
Get that gallon of ice cream out of the fridge and grab a spoon from the drawer.
No, it's carb. It's going to be like carb central. Where the food just goes into the mouth. You're not even paying attention if you're full. It's just like you don't feel full. I'm excited.
The label on the back of the package that speaks to serving sizes no longer applies to you. Whatever the sugar or carb content, we can triple
that. That's never applied to me.
Danny, I did not want to wrap up without saying your social media presence and your feed on X, because you could go at this different ways. I just love how you intentionally, I think, try to spread some joy, and your posts they're never mean-spirited. It's very purposeful in the sense that you're trying to maybe conjure some memories or some nostalgia about TV from the 80s. I love the SNL stuff from that kind of turning point, 85, 86. Yeah. That's when I was a little kid and started watching SNL, I only saw that reinvented cast.
I call that the powerhouse season. It was the one and done season. Billy Crystal, Martin Short, Chris Guest. I mean, you can say Julia Louis-Dreyfus, but she was barely used. Mary Gross was barely used. Jim Belushi was barely used. But it was the powerhouse season. They brought in the powerhouse writers. They were all one and done. They all knew it was going to be one and done. And it was just the material. What they really did was you know, SNL is rigid. You know, it's like, you know, okay, you're going to get your cold open. You're going to get your monologue. You might go into a commercial, or you might go and do a game show sketch. Well, in this case, it was just, there were no rules. It, like, almost anything goes. I mean, one episode had no host. One episode was just a long sketch. Everything was just different. There were no rules to it. And, you know, for me, social media, I mean, I'm always going to call it Twitter. You know, it's,
yeah,
it's, look, when it comes to politics, you're not going to change my mind. I'm not going to change your mind. I'm not going to scream like a maniac from my couch or sitting in my car or wherever I am to tell you my opinions, because I don't think people care what I have to say. Sometimes I will say something, that usually it's not political. Sometimes I'll get personal, but I usually don't. I don't say my kids' names or anything like that on Twitter. I don't reveal too much. I consider myself a private person in many ways, but you know, there's just too much, you know, especially, you know, since Elon, I think, has bought Twitter, it's become more of a toxic place. And my job is to be what it used to always be, is just to share something kind. You know, remember that we are kind. Remember, whether you vote left, vote right, most of us find this funny. Most of us find this adorable. Remember how good you felt when you felt this. You know, people say, how do you let MAGA people follow you or whatever? I'm like, you know what? I'm not here for that. You know, I'm not going to go out and be best friends with this person, that person. We're just here spreading joy. That's all I'm doing. There's no agenda to me other than to make people smile and to remember something that was good, that we enjoy. That's really what it comes down to. I'm not here to preach. I'm not telling you who to vote for. I'm not telling you who to pray for, to not pray for, because it doesn't matter. You know, it's like some people sit there on Twitter all day long, you know, tweet after tweet after tweet after tweet, or post after post after post after. It's like, what are you doing? It's like, this thing I posted didn't take. Then let's post this instead. Or, you know,
I call
tweeting diarrhea. And it's like, just stop.
I was thinking about that today. People who post such consistent vitriol. It's not just every once in a while. It's like these brands, and they've also got the blue check marks. So you're like, this guy's pretty serious. Like, this is what he does. And you realize he's within that 35 to 45 demographic. So I start thinking all he posts is hate or trying to stir up emotions in the worst way. And mm-hmm. I'm like, what happens when the calendar hits Christmas Day or Thanksgiving Day? Surely maybe he's got kids, he's got a mom. He sits down at a table with his mother, and this is what he's been doing all year. What is this person like in those moments when it's just time to be nice? It's just time to be gentle.
I think it's easier to be a prick behind a computer screen. It's easier to be mean and feel like you have no rules sitting there on your phone and doing whatever, you know, the armchair warrior, Monday morning quarterback, whatever it is. It's easier to spew your emotions because you don't have to say that to that person's face. I think most of us are good people inside. I think there's a lot of people who are misguided, misinformed, but it's not my job to change you. It's not my job to have that conversation with you, because, you know, you reach a certain age, Dan, and it's like, I just don't care anymore. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, you can say whatever you want with your misinformation. You don't want to be vaccinated? Fine. You think 2 and 2 equals 5? Good for you. You believe that? And you're right. I'm not going to argue with you. I don't have time to argue with you. You know, it's, you do what you got to do to make yourself feel better, you know? And for me, you pick your places, you pick your happiness, you pick your spots. That's the old comedy adage, pick your spots. You know, it's much more fun to see people smile, to see, like, you know, I posted something over the weekend. I posted a video of Steve Martin and Gregory Hines. And, you know, people from both sides of the aisle loved it, you know, and there was no politics really in it. And, you know, it's much more fun to see that many people get into something that I got into. You know, it's not my content, but to see somebody appreciate that. And, you know, no matter who you are, it's like, that's the key right there. It's like, how do we stay here? And I'm, for those who can't see me, I'm doing the middle ground without having to, you know, our emotions go up and down, up and down, up and down. So my job, what I like to do is just make people just take a moment and just
I think people appreciate that. especially, you know, if you, let's say you're 16 or you're 26, you really haven't grown up in a time period where, you know, we grew up with those sitcoms and just the gentle joyfulness that people exhibited when you turned on a we didn't have screens in our pockets, but we turn on TV and it was just fun stuff. And if you're that age, it's just, it's so tense. It's so, who can be witty in the worst way? Who can get the best?
Who gets the most clicks? It's everyone look at me. You'll look on any of my social media profiles. You don't see me anywhere. I'm nowhere. You know, I might every now and then say something personal, but I don't say anything about what I'm thinking or it's like, there was a great picture. I remember, I think it was during the 2012 election. And actually back then I was kind of a little bit more vocal, but not as much, not crazy. But I remember somebody posted a picture and it was a picture of Obama speaking in front of like a packed house, like just like whatever. And it says, and I remember the one caption said, oh, and there was another person doing the same thing, but there was nobody in the seats. The one picture with Obama said, how I view my post, but in reality, it's like one person sitting there and whatever, you know, and I didn't want to be that person. Like, I didn't want to be the person where it's just like, I'm constantly just saying something like, this person's bad, that person's bad. You know, in the end, I think people do the right thing. I hope people do the right thing, but that's why I just stopped kind of like talking about that stuff. It's like, how can I make people smile rather than constantly think or constantly, you know, or preach to the choir? It's like, there's no need.
Yeah, people are thinking enough. And I think by you taking that stance, you probably hit the pillow a little easier than people that take the opposite stance. I mean, I always wonder, like, how do these people, they got to brush their teeth at the end of the night. They're getting ready for bed and they're just calling it a night and they're going to get up in the morning and just be the same jerk all over again.
Yeah, you could go be miserable. I'm going to sit outside. I'm going to have a drink. I'm going to smoke a cigar. I'm going to watch my sports team or, you know, whatever. I'll play maybe like a mindless game on my computer and I'm just going to live my life. You know, you go be angry at the person who's president, running for president, something that you're afraid of that you don't understand, it has no effect on you, and you're gonna make noise about it. You go do that while I go enjoy myself, you know. And it's not like I'm enjoying myself in like some big fat house and car and everything. It's like, no, I'm just, whether I enjoying myself is in a 3x3 room, you know, in a crate, I'm gonna go just be happy somewhere where, you know, you can continue to be miserable. Go ahead. I'm too old for that.
And like you said, in 100 years, unless you're a major, major public, the president of the United States, or you're part of a rock band.
Are we still talking about Chester A. Arthur? Are we still talking about Joan of Arc? Like, what do we know about Joan of Arc, really?
Yeah.
You know, what she did for France, burned at the stake. We don't know if she was a good friend. We don't know if she made an incredible souffle. Nobody knows. Look, Beatles, we'll listen to their music. No one's going to be talking about Paul McCartney in 200 years the way we talk about him now. Bruno Mars. No one's going to talk about these people. 100 years, all new people.
Yeah.
Make the best of it while you're here.
if you get just your name and the year that you were born and a hyphen and the year that you died, if you get that on a headstone, that's about as good as it gets when we talk.
Think about how many people are going to next time you go to a cemetery. You will never hear about these people in your lifetime. Yeah. Ever. You'll know nothing about them. Maybe like a few people. 100 years from now, someone's going to be living in the house that you bought.
Right.
Someone might be driving in the car that you drove. You know, someone's going to own your baseball card collection. It's not going to be you. So while you're here, enjoy what you got, be happy, smile. You're smiling.
Danny, this has been such an enjoyable conversation. I wish I could talk to you all night and smoke a cigar with you.
Oh, anytime.
Would love to have you back on the show in the future.
Sure.
Folks, you can find Danny. Your main website is DuraniPR.com. That's for the PR firm. How do folks, they want to keep up with you on social media? I'll have it in the show notes, but if you want to.
I'm on Twitter. I'm the only Danny Durrani on Twitter. I go by my whole name, Danny, normal spelling, D-E-R-A-N-E-Y. Same thing on Instagram, Threads, other places too, but I don't really check those as much. But I don't really check Instagram either, but I'm more visible on X, Twitter.
Well, you've been a fantastic guest today, Danny. We started with Buffett. Maybe let's end with, is there a favorite song, or does it bounce around? Do you have different Jimmy? Yeah.
Manana.
Oh, love it. Please don't say manana unless you don't, or please don't say manana.
Don't say manana unless you
don't mean it.
Don't try.
I have heard those words.
Unless you've seen it.
Yeah. That's a great one.
I'm a major Kiss fan, so that's why I think I lean to that song a little bit.
Kiss, I'm a big fan. My older brother's a big fan. Do you like the 80s period? Are you an Asylum fan? What's the other one? I'm thinking
Animal Eyes.
Crazy Nights was actually the first cassette that I got.
I went to the Crazy Nights concert. You know, I think I forced myself back then to believe it was the same as what the 70s were. I was too little. I mean, I appreciated it, but I was too little. And by the time I got to my teenage years and stuff, when they were there, I think after Animal Eyes, I thought everything got watered down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they lost some of that energy that came from Creatures of the Night, and they just became more pop. And then they were following trends, and but back then I loved them. I was only me and my best friend were listening to them. Still, everybody else was like, why, you know, I think back then I was trying to hold on to something, but for sure, like anything after 1980, after Asylum, I don't think like nothing is played by them. And I mean, like I still know all the words to all the songs and everything, but like nothing is in like on my Spotify. I don't even put those albums on there.
Some people don't like the first three, Hotter Than Hell, the sound quality. I can deal with it.
They're terribly produced, and they don't sound like they were recorded live. Maybe they were, but they're just really slow.
Now, I think my favorite of the makeup era, it sounds good, and it's a good batch of songs, Dynasty. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe took some people some time, but I like stuff like Charisma.
Mm-hmm.
And Sure Know Something, but
I was
Rock and Roll Over.
That's the first album. My brother actually got that album. I remember him getting that album. We were in New York visiting, and someone bought. We were allowed to pick an album each. My brother picked Kiss Dynasty. I picked an album from the old TV show The Electric Company. It was nothing but Spider-Man stories. So that's what I picked. That being said, we listened to that album a million times on our little record player in our bedroom. And I think if I was 15 years old at that time, I probably would have hated it, but I didn't understand the whole, it wasn't cool to do disco at all. I didn't get that, even though everyone like Stones, Rod Stewart, Beach Boys, everyone was going disco. I didn't really think of that. I didn't get it. It made no sense to me. So I probably, if I was old enough, I probably would have resented it. Dynasty is one of those albums, same with Unmasked, that it's more of a nostalgia thing. But I mean, like, I think Ace's songs are killer on that. And Gene's two songs. Have you ever heard the demo for X-Ray Eyes?
No.
Oh, dude, go listen to it. I actually wish it was that version. It's more sinister. It's a different chord change and speed, but it's pretty badass.
There's still so much with Kiss to explore. Like, I don't really know Hot in the Shade all the way through, but there's like 18 tracks, I think.
No, it's 18. It's like 16 tracks, 99% filler.
Yeah.
It's filler.
I know the stuff I know, but yeah, I don't go real deep past the album tracks. Kiss Alive 3, because of my age, when I first got my driver's license, I was listening to Kiss Live 3 constantly in the first car I drove. That's when I fell in love with songs like Deuce and Watching You.
I had my Kiss Alive 3 poster here. I don't know where it went.
And I thought it was like underappreciated for the longest time.
It was, I don't mind it. I mean, as fake as it is, fake live as it is, I don't mind it. I like the live recordings. I actually told Eric Singer once how much I admired the double bass on Detroit Rock City.
Yes.
And he was very happy about that. It took Gene Simmons some convincing to do that.
And you've worked with Gene, right?
I did. That's one of those surreal moments, being a major Kiss fan and then being on his PR team. That's just weird.
But like you said, once you're on a phone call or you're sitting at a table and you're just hammering out some business stuff, all of a sudden
it goes away. But sometimes it's just weird, you're like this fan of this artist and all of a sudden the next thing you know, you're working with them, like the story with Ozzy. When I first met Ozzy, being a major Ozzy and Sabbath fan, we were in Studio City and I knew I was going to work with him, and we were doing a media tour. And it was the day that Syd Barrett of Pink Floyd died. And I'm talking with Tony, who was Ozzy and Sharon's assistant. And we were just like sitting in the green room, and Ozzy just comes walking in, all of a sudden he hears, "Who died?" And like, "Oh, Syd Barrett. Oh, Syd Barrett. Oh," and next thing you know, and I never said hi to him at this point. We haven't even met. And the next thing I know, for the next 30 minutes, I'm talking Pink Floyd with Ozzy. And then like halfway through the conversation, I'm like, what's happening? You know what I mean? It's just
to become surreal in certain moments where you're having a conversation with this person and the features are right there and the voice, and you're like, wow, I've been listening to your records. And
yeah, just stupid. But again, it goes away. You work with them enough, you become friendly, you become, you're in his house, you're whatever it is. It's normal. It's just a normal feeling. It's just like, there's nothing that level. When I realized that moment, how surreal that was, how I wasn't paying attention, once you like, you recognize it, you move on, but it's just weird. It's weird where life takes you. Again, how the heck do I become a crisis communications guy? How the heck do I become somebody who people lean on for elder abuse? What? There are no elderly in my family, but I'm that guy. It's just, you just don't know what's going to happen. You don't know where your life is going to take you.
I wrote down, this is like a little anecdote, but I think it's, man, what would have happened if you'd taken this offer, the Jonesboro, Arkansas sports anchor job? Yeah. If you'd said, yeah, let's just do it. And
I don't think I'd be here. I don't think I'd be here. No. I know I would have been miserable. That much I know. But I think about that from time to time. What would have happened if I decided to be a sports anchor in Jonesboro, Arkansas? There's two reasons.
Covering the Razorbacks.
No. No. I'll tell you. When I had the call, I believe it was like some school like Arkansas State. It was like some small school. It wasn't even Arkansas State. It wasn't the Razorbacks. It was like
Fayetteville is Arkansas.
I don't know what school it was. I would have covered them. I would have flown a Cessna, apparently, to Tennessee Titan games. And that was an absolute hell no. I'm not going on anything with propellers ever. And if the St. Louis Cardinals made the playoffs or the World Series, I would cover that. So that's what it would have been. But I mean, I would have been miserable.
Well, I think you made the right call. Sometimes there's opportunities that come at you in life and you just got to pass them by.
Trust me, I don't care about being on TV. I don't care. And I'm on TV like doing interviews, with various shows, but I turned down most opportunities that involve TV than you can possibly imagine. I probably turned down about 90% of them. I just don't care, to be seen. It depends on what the opportunity is. But again, that means nothing to me. What matters most to me is happiness and contentment. Like, wow, I'm on, it was cool, it's cool when like your kids are little and like, oh my God, dad's on TV. That's great. But then it's like, yeah, not into it.
Well, I really like your perspective, and I think you're doing a good job of spreading that mentality, hopefully, to younger people that are coming of age, and that they're not that they can check their ego at the door sometimes. Yeah, and it doesn't have to be this monster. I mean, sometimes people are loaded with ambition. They're ready to take on the world, but you could put a cap on the ego. I don't know. I think I've heard people talk about having a healthy ego, and you see the extreme end of that where people they don't have any concept of themselves, of how ridiculous they sound boasting about their achievements. And
no, the best person is the one who doesn't talk about themselves and doesn't need lets the work speak for themselves. Those are the best people. Those are the people you need to find, because those are the people you want to emulate. How do I get to, I mean, on your way up working, how do I get to achieve that level of happiness? Not, I don't want to hear about the people that you stepped on along the way to get there.
Love it. I love it. Love every bit of it. And I was going to, that's probably a good answer to what advice would you give? You probably just, or you just laid it out there.
Take whatever I said.
Well, Danny, you've been so gracious with your time, and sure. Certainly hope we could do this again in the future.
Absolutely.
It's been great. Dan time. How about on the way out here, you start going by Danny. Was that when you were a young boy, a teenager, or how far along were you still Daniel?
No one called me Dan. Nobody called me Dan. And I always felt like if my name was Dan, that I needed to do something with my hands. Like I needed to be like a plumber. I needed to be able to build things. You know, something that...
Yeah.
Like there's Dan. He's going to solve the problem. Like, you know, he's come here. Oh, Dan. Oh, watch out. Here comes Dan.
Dan's
I never felt comfortable being Dan. Like I felt like it was someone else. You know, the only people that call me Dan, have ever called me Dan, is my mother-in-law will say it from time to time. And I had an ex-girlfriend call me Dan because she knew I hated it. I didn't hate it. I just didn't feel comfortable with it. Like I always felt like Dans were more important. You know, they were more like, they could do things, like, you know, usually with their hands, usually, you know, to problem solve or whatever. I was always making jokes at inopportune times. And I was always making jokes, and I was always laughing. I was always never serious. I just felt comfortable being Danny. No one really calls me Daniel but my father. It's just, I don't know. It just stuck.
I always love asking the story, because I may not have started going by Dan, but I have an older brother, Robert, and I thought he started going by Rob, but it was actually what his friends were calling him, and he preferred Robert. But when I thought that he was becoming Rob, I thought, because I looked up to him, I thought, well, I guess I want to be Dan. He's going from Robert to Rob. I'll go from Daniel to Dan. That's how it all started.
Wow.
Could have been much different.
Hey, man, if you were Margaret, you could be Peggy right now.
And I saw that post where you answered somebody's question. You're like, how did someone go from Margaret to Peggy?
Because I, you know what, I was fascinated by that too. And I only learned this a couple years ago, like about that. Like, why are people named Rick Dick? You know, and that's because, and it's the same thing, Margaret and Peggy. And it's all the same thing. Where when people used to write to each other, they just started adding nicknames to their names. So, you know, Margaret, Margie, Peggy, Rick, Hick, Dick. Like, that's just how it was. And bottom line is, blame the British, you know, for their skills, you know, for their rhyming. That's really what it is. But all those names that you're like, why? You know, why? How are you getting, what's Judith? Trudy? What's Trudy?
I've got a cat named Trudy.
Yeah, I mean, so whatever. I mean, all those names, you know.
There's Winnie. How do you go? Henry to Hank. That one,
it's probably the same thing. It's probably the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just trying to hen.
One of my favorites is the nickname for Barbara, Babs. I always like Babs.
And that makes sense. That makes sense. Babs.
Sebastian Bach from Skid Row. I'm sure you remember. Boz, don't they call him Boz or Baz?
Seabass.
Oh, man. Well, Danny, what I probably said, hey, it's been a great conversation about 10 times now, but we find some little mini topic to explore, and I've loved it. Hope you have, too. This has been a blast today.
It has. I always like podcasts. Podcasts are a nice endorphin mixer.
And my goal is to get people talking. If this spurs somebody who's listening to have a conversation, as everybody text, but if you have an opportunity to get on the phone with somebody, call your mom, call your Aunt Susan. She'd love to hear from you. And yeah, you're going to be on the phone for an hour, but give her a call.
I would love an Aunt Susan. I would love an Aunt.
Yeah. Well, you guys have a great rest of the week. And remember, if you can do anything in this world, because people are going to forget all about you, that you ever existed, spread some joy. It is the easiest thing to do. Okay? And follow Danny. Go on there and watch the video that he shared of, I think it's Central Park, and they're singing, "I Want to Hold Your Hand." If you haven't already seen it, was that in Central Park, New York?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be the best thing you've seen all day, all week. Check it out, and appreciate you being on the show today, Dan. Danny.
You too, brother. No, you can call me Dan. That's fine.
All right. That's it for this episode. We'll see you next Sunday. Dan Time Podcast. Have a great week. Thank you, Danny.
Oh, my pleasure, brother. Thank you so much. That was fun.